To the Clean and Filthy Podcast with your host, Matthew M.
Hello and welcome back to the Clean and Filthy Podcast, where we are clean and serene with a filthy mind in between. I am your host, Matthew M., and I am an addict in recovery. First off, welcome back. This is officially episode 3. Super excited to be here. Super grateful that everybody's here with us today. And also, before we get into anything else, I have to give a huge shout out to everybody for all of the love I've been getting. Downloads have been popping off. We are officially, as a podcast, have been downloaded in three different continents. That's right. We're getting there, and it wouldn't be possible without everybody here helping, supporting, helping us grow, sharing this podcast with people. And, you know, it's really a beautiful thing to see. So I have to say thank you to everybody and welcome. You know, shout out to everybody who's on the live stream right now on YouTube.com. We live stream every single week at 5 p.m. Arizona time on YouTube every Tuesday. So if you want to watch us live, come through, check that out. And if you don't want to watch us live and you just want to listen to us wherever you consume your podcasts, thank you very much for that. My downloads have been going up a lot, and I really appreciate it. That's how we're going to grow. So please make sure to download this podcast. Even if you do watch it live, that's a simple ask. Just head over to the website, www.cleanandfilthy.com, and you can like and subscribe or follow wherever you get your podcast information. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We are on Google Podcasts, pretty much everywhere. Still waiting on Pandora. They're slow. I don't really know why, but they're slow. But again, huge thank you to everybody for all the support, all the positive comments I've been getting, all of the notes of ways we can improve. And, you know, I love each and every one of you. So before we go any further, I have to give a huge shout out to our episode sponsors for this week. First off, we have Etc. by Emily. So if you have any need for staffing for parties or events, or if you're looking for a job, please check out her information. It's listed in the description below. And also, we have a new sponsor for this episode, Metaphysical Minds. They are a brand new company that specializes in selling of crystals and sage and all kinds of other spiritual type of things. So if you would like to check that out, go down into the description below and all the links are listed there. Also, I have to give a huge shout out to our VIP supporters. These are the people on Patreon who contribute to help build this podcast. Shout out first off to Clint P, Andrea R, and Alex T. If you are interested in becoming a VIP supporter, please go to the website up in the top where all of the social media links are. There is a link there for Patreon. And for everybody who subscribes with a monthly donation, you get one of these awesome Clean and Filthy podcast stickers that we can help, you know, this brand grow. So again, thank you so much to everybody for supporting, and especially to our episode sponsors and our VIP subscribers. Just want to say before we go any further, again, thank you so much. It really touches me, the fact that we're growing. And the amount of success that I'm feeling is only because of the help of everybody out there. So if this is your first time stopping through to this podcast, hope you hear something you like. Hopefully you stick around. And if you do hear something you like, please make sure to like, comment, subscribe, follow, tweet, retweet. Just try to get us out there. You know, like I said, we're growing very organically, from one guy with an idea to getting some help from people to developing something that, you know, we're really trying to change lives with. So Again, thank you all very much. And also, stay tuned because we got some big things coming in the next week. We got a new mic coming. We got a new mic arm. The production value is going up a little bit. So, you know, trying to put out the best product we can. And that's only because you guys are out there supporting me. So thank you very much. So, you know what time it is? Let's get into first segment.
Let's head to the lab for some R&D. Recovery and development.
That's right. We are heading to the lab for some R&D, recovery and development. This is the segment, each episode, where we discuss one of the 12 steps, principles, concepts, traditions, kind of go through all of the things on a day-to-day basis that, as addicts, we need to try to implement into our lives. So this is the part where we can really kind of look at the things that we have to do on a daily basis to really grow and really change. But don't worry, if you are not an addict and you are just like, why are we, you know, wanting to do this stuff? That's okay. You're exactly where you want to be or where you need to be, because there's something within recovery for everybody, honestly. And that's the amazing thing about recovery, is that it's not just about drug use. It's not just about, you know, the things that we do as addicts. It's about how to become a better person, and that can apply to everybody. I apologize. I have to take a quick step back, because before we get into this, I want to make sure that we again do this every episode and explain what we are not. Again, my name is Matthew M. I am an addict in recovery. To make sure I stay in line with the traditions, I will not be mentioning any specific fellowships. I will not be mentioning my home group. I will not be mentioning, you know, anything from that perspective, because that's not what this is. This is not a 12-step meeting. This is not a 12-step fellowship meeting. This is an opportunity for myself as an addict to give my experience, strength, and hope, and a little bit of my opinion about what has worked for me. And so if you're out there and you're struggling and you want information, this is not the podcast for that, but I will be more than happy to do that. So reach out to me directly. You know, contact me directly at Matthew@cleanandfilthypodcast.com. And I'll be more than happy to get you to a meeting or to send you information about, you know, recovery residences, sober livings, things like that, treatment centers. More than happy to help. But this is not an endorsement of any specific fellowship. This is not a telling you that this fellowship works and this one doesn't. We're not doing that type of thing here. All we're trying to do is create a community for people who might have questions about recovery or addiction, or maybe feel that they need help as a good starting point, a nice launch pad, if you will, for people out there to really understand a little bit more of what we go through as addicts. So again, I'm not endorsing any 12-step fellowship. I'm not going to be mentioning any 12-step fellowship by name. So just bear in mind, that is not what we are. We are a podcast sharing experience, strength, and hope, and a little bit of opinion regarding recovery and what has worked for me personally. So sorry, I'm a little discombobulated today. I apologize. But now let's head to the lab for some R&D. So let's grab our lab coats and our safety goggles, because we're getting into step three today. And like I said, this is where we go through different steps or traditions or concept or spiritual principles and really kind of go a little deeper than simply just what the words are, and talk about how they affect my life and the lives of addicts everywhere. So third step, it says we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Now, I mentioned it last week and when we went over step two, but step two and step three were very difficult for me. This whole concept of God was such a difficult thing. The spiritual aspects were so missing in my life when I made it to the rooms. I mean, spirituality was not a thing in my life. So as I discussed last week, you know, having a concept of a higher power was a difficult thing. It was a very difficult thing. But even once I was able to work through that, and, you know, if you have questions about higher power, check out last week's episode, shameless plug there, trying to get those numbers up. But even when I came to that conclusion that, okay, I have something in my life as a higher power that works, the concept of turning my will and my life over, that just wasn't a thing. that just wasn't a thing at all. That was such a foreign concept to me, because that in turn forces me to admit that I'm not in control. And I never really realized how prevalent the character defect of control really was in my life until I got into the rooms, until I worked a true third step, and then especially when I worked a sixth step. Because I never looked at myself as like a control freak type of person. But when I would look back at my actions, especially in active addiction, and not just in active addiction, I saw how often I would try to impose my way, my thoughts, my will onto a situation, usually with very detrimental consequence. But in the moment, I wouldn't really care. I would push for my will. And if I didn't get it, then we'd just be like, oh, well, fuck that person. They're dumb. They don't know what they're talking about. I know. I'm in control. This is the right way. But that's not how recovery works. And while that was such a difficult concept for me at first, I can truly say after working a third step and putting the third step into action, sometimes on a day-to-day basis, it is such a freeing feeling. And we'll get a little bit more to the freedom of you know, what the third step really brings. But one of my biggest issues with the third step was when I read it on the wall. And I stopped reading. I stopped reading when I saw that capital G and the word God. I didn't read the rest of it. Typical addict trying to manipulate reality. I only looked at what I saw. I only looked at that part of it. I didn't think about what could actually be if I read the full rest of that statement. I just didn't do it. And so as soon as I saw God, I shut down. I just completely shut down. I was like, nope, not for me. But when you read those last words of it, as we understood him, and again, that whole him, capital H, still scares me, still don't like it. But the whole point of the third step is it allows us to build off of that second step, off of that second step of whatever we find our higher power to be. And as we discussed last week, all that matters for our higher power is that it's loving, caring, it's greater than ourselves. And as I add, helps keep me clean. It's not some religious, you know, Judeo-Christian, Muslim, whatever type of God. It doesn't have to be. If it is, and that works for you, cool. Congratulations, but it doesn't have to be. And that is such a freedom. And the third step really builds off of that. It builds off of that concept that we get to build and develop a spiritual connection with something, whatever that something is. But the idea of turning my will over to something, it was so scary for me. And I will go into that. Like I said, I didn't feel like I was a super control freak, but I always believed that if I wanted to do something, I had control over that. I could, with the right life circumstances, with the right, you know, things in life, I could make something work. But the third step forces me to admit that I'm not in control. And it's so weird, because when I look at what did being in control lead me to? It led me to the rooms of recovery. It led me to being arrested 7 times in 2 years with 5 felonies. It led me to being so spiritually devoid that I wasn't living. But no matter how bad things were, I still felt like I had control. Again, never realized how prevalent that character defect was until I actually did some work by doing some step work, by looking at some character defects. But it's weird, because this entire step requires so much additional surrender. You know, that surrender that we initially have on the first step, we then have to build on in the third step. We have to build on that element of surrender. And just the biggest way for me to relinquish control is to surrender. that there might be something more. And again, you don't have to be religious to do this. All that is required within this step is willingness. Willingness to try. Willingness to believe that there could be something else out there. And when we do that, we achieve this level of freedom. That's why I say that the third step was my favorite step for my recovery and why it was so important and so freeing. Because by working a third step, I was able to realize I wasn't in control of every little thing. But even better, I didn't have to be in control of every little thing. So let me say that again. I realized that I wasn't in control of everything, but I also didn't have to be in control of every little thing. And not worrying about every single little detail and every single aspect of my life. Not having to put the energy and the stress and the worry and the daily just, the grind of overanalyzing and overplanning and overthinking. And then once that doesn't go to plan, everything falling to shit because I believed I was in control of every little thing. It is such a freeing feeling. Being able to just sit back and just let go. And there's a term you hear a lot in the rooms. It says, you know, just let go and let God. And oh my God, when I would hear that early on, I wanted to throw up.
That part.
Because the concept of letting go and letting God, I still in my warped addict mind, God, no, that's like super powerful sky daddy type thing. Can't get down with that. So if you have a problem with the word God, do what millions of people around the world have done in recovery. Change those letters. Change those letters to good orderly direction or group of drug addicts. Because it doesn't have to be anything more than that. And once I was able to kind of move away from that thought process, I became more willing to actually consider turning my will over to this power. And I don't know when it happened. I don't know when it happened or why it happened. But by doing it, things started to change. I no longer felt alone. That's part of the reason why, you know, so many people say that you know, their higher power can be the rooms of whatever fellowship. Because within that, we're able to see others. And when we see others doing the same thing that now we're doing, we lose that sense of hopelessness. And when we lose that sense of hopelessness, then we become a little bit more willing to try something. Try something that has worked for so many others. And when I did that, and I started to make a conscious effort to try and give up control, that freedom just started pouring in. And I will admit, honestly, like that freedom almost poured in too much, because then I started saying, okay, well, if I'm living, if I have this higher power who's watching out for me, then just let go and let God. And then I went from the one side of saying, I could never use that sentence, that is the most ridiculous thing ever, to going the completely opposite side of the spectrum. Like, all right, well, I don't have to worry about anything. Higher power's got me. We're good. I don't have to worry about anything. I don't have to worry about getting a job. Higher power's got me. I don't have to worry about money. Higher power's got me. And that, for an addict like me, can be a very slippery slope. Because then I can start living in laziness and complacency and not wanting to do any work. I could truly say that with over a year clean, I would be sitting there with $20 in my bank account. And just saying, meh, it's okay. My higher power's got me. And that speaks to another character defect that was difficult for me to work through. And I still struggle with at times. Because as an addict, as a daily using drug addict for many, many, many years, three of which, my last 3 years of active addiction, I never had a job. But I always found ways and means to get more. And I almost wore that as like a badge of honor in a way of like, well, I have no money. I'm not going to get a job, but I'm going to find a way to make sure I'm loaded. I'm going to find a way to make sure I get something. And then that kind of translated in my recovery. Again, of almost like, well, I know I can do it. I know my higher power will provide for me without doing anything and out taking any action. And that's the thing, is that the third step is an action step. The first two steps, that's stuff that we're processing internally. That's stuff that we're figuring out inside of us. But the third step requires action. Because if we don't act, then we will do exactly what I just described. We'll sit there. We'll sit there and say, it's okay. Everything's going to work out. I don't have to put any effort into it. I can just chill. I can just chill, and whatever's going to be is whatever's going to be. But that's not the case. Because when we turn our will and our lives over to a higher power, that is a tool for us. That is a tool that allows us to take, you know, the action. That's why the word decision inside the third step is so important, because we are making the decision. Nobody's making that decision for us. You know, it says in our literature that for the first time, for many of us, since we took that first drug, we are making a decision for ourselves. Nobody else is doing it for us. Not our wives, children, husbands, judges, you know, attorneys, treatment centers, priests, whatever. We are making that decision. But decision, like I said, implies action. And that's a difficult thing. Because as it says in our literature, you know, we are responsible for our recovery. And if we're sitting there getting complacent, or we're sitting there thinking that, you know, oh, well, my higher power isn't looking out for me, my life hasn't gotten any better, but we're doing nothing, that kind of speaks to last week's topic of insanity. Nothing changes if nothing changes. And if I don't put in the action for something to change, why do I expect something's going to change? That doesn't make sense. But I hear that a lot. I hear a lot of people say that. You know, well, my higher power doesn't have my back. And I know for a fact that my higher power always has my back. If I choose to align my will with my higher power, that's on me. And sometimes I'll admit it. Sometimes I like to sit in self-will. Sometimes I like to make it hard. Oof.
Phrasing
that part, but that's how I am, because I'm an addict. There are times where I know I could turn something over. I know that I could sit there and just ask for good, orderly direction from my higher power, but that doesn't mean I always want to do it. That doesn't mean that I always want to live in that. Sometimes, being an addict, I like to sit in my shit. Sometimes I like to sit in misery. Sometimes, like I said before, I like to sit there with $20 in my bank account and just say, it's going to be okay, whatever. Oh, poor, woe is me. But I don't have to do that. I don't have to do that today, because I have a loving and caring higher power. Now, when we come to that level of action, we have to look at the willingness required. Because this step will not work without willingness. And how do we get willingness? By having open-mindedness on the last step. That's why it was so many of these steps focus on the three most discussed spiritual principles in recovery: honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. Because I can't be open-minded without honesty, and I can't be willing without being open-minded. But once I'm willing and I just try, like I said, freedom. Freedom just opens up in my life. Freedom to know that if I do my best, I'm going to be all right. And that isn't to say, I'm not sitting here saying that I feel my life is totally mapped out. I'm not saying that my higher power's will for me, it has every single thing broken down, you know, to every action I take. I'm not saying I don't believe that it's my higher power's will for me to have drank two Bang energy drinks before 4 o'clock today. I'm a little bit tired, had my son this weekend, didn't sleep much. I don't think that's my higher power's will. But I do believe that my higher power is always there for me, is always watching out for me. And if I'm doing my best to be as good of a person as I can be, to help as many people as I can be, I'm living within my higher power's will. And now I will say, especially when I first came into the rooms, once I got a little bit past the laziness and the oh, it's my higher power's will, I was able to manipulate it into a different way. I was able to manipulate it into a different way of, okay, well, I'm going to do this because this is my higher power's will for me. Oh, I'm going to do this with this person because this is my higher power's will for me. And I didn't have a lot of clarity about what that really meant, because I would just throw everything in there. Oh, well, it's my higher power's will for me to, you know, stay up until 5 o'clock in the morning because my higher power is letting it happen. So it must be my higher power's will, right? But the best line that I have ever read in any recovery literature was probably the biggest point of clarity for my life and what my higher power's will is for me. And it says that we began to see that God's will for us is the ability to live with dignity, to love ourselves and others, to laugh, and to find great joy and beauty in our surroundings. They are the very essence of God's will for us. Now that sentence is everything to me. That sentence is everything to my recovery. Because I can get behind that. I can get behind that. I don't have to try to rationalize and justify and try to figure out what my higher power's will is for me. Because if I read that, I'm good. Am I living with dignity? Well, I haven't been arrested over the last more than 3 years. Haven't been to jail. Haven't stolen from my family. Haven't stolen from Walmart. Haven't gone out of my way to live within self-interest. Haven't done something to just further me. And again, I'm not perfect with that. There have been times within my recovery that the only thing I did right was not use. There have been those times. And there have been times when I wasn't trying to live in my higher power's will, where I was wanting to live in self-will because I'm an addict and I want what I want when I want it. That's just a fact of life. But when I can take a step back and in a situation where I want something, ask for guidance. Ask my higher power to just help me see what it is that I'm supposed to see. Not what I want, but what I need. Again, freedom. And within that freedom comes clarity. And it's gotten to the point where, and again, there have been plenty of times where I have lost that connection because I wasn't seeking it. It's not like my higher power is just like, hey, bro, I'm out. Deuces. I'm going to Cancun for 2 weeks. See you when I get back. No, my higher power is always there. And my higher power's will is always there. But again, it's on me to take that action to align my will with my higher power's will. So I cannot tell you how many times I have come back to this exact, I have this line in my reading, underlined, highlighted, starred, circled, because whenever I start to question my higher power's will, I go right back to this. I go right back to this and realize that it is always right there. But it's required for me to take that action to do it. And I don't know when it occurred, but at some point, something changed within me personally. And something changed within me to where I wasn't struggling with the thought process of, oh, is this in my higher power's will? Is this my higher power's will? Is this self-will? And again, this is just for me personally and my personality type and my, you know, how things work with me. There's a really interesting personality test called the Enneagram that we're going to get into a little bit further in the podcast that has given me so much clarity within this topic and within a ton of things within my recovery. So we'll get into that at another point. But getting that clarity of seeing that if I have to question if something's in my higher power's will, it probably isn't. And I don't know when it happened. Oh boy. I don't know when it happened. I don't know. Like, it wasn't like there was some, you know, burning bush lightning strike moment where it was just like, oh, I'm living in my higher power's will. But at some point, it got to where if I had to think about something, if I had that little feeling of ickiness, I realized I was not aligned with my higher power's will. And that is not everybody's story. That's not most people's story from what I've heard. But for me, that's one of the greatest feelings. And that for me is why I love the third step so much. Because I feel serenity in my normal life. I feel peace with the normal things I do on a day-to-day basis. Because I feel that my will is aligned with my higher power's will. I feel that I'm walking on a path that my higher power wants me to. And that's by being of service. That's by helping others. That's by answering the phone calls that sometimes I don't want to answer. I literally have looked at my phone before and said, wow, I really don't want to talk to this person. And then looked and then thought to myself, is that my higher power's will? Because that sounds like self-will right there. That sounds like self-will of wanting to not connect, of wanting to not help somebody, and just wanting to be selfish. And inherently, if I am living in my higher power's will, being selfish is so much more difficult. Getting out of myself, getting out of self-centeredness, immediately allows me to align my will with my higher power's will. Because if we're self-centered, then we're not God-centered. Period. So if I'm being self-centered, then I'm not living based on spiritual principles. And that's not to say that there aren't times that I might need to be a little self-centered for the sake of my own mental well-being, especially during quarantine. But I know that my higher power is always there, and I know that my higher power's will is always there. It's just up to me to actually take the action so that occurs. So again, this is a massive step. This is my absolute favorite step within my recovery, because without this, I know for a fact I couldn't have done a four step. If I didn't believe that there was something there helping me, giving me a source of strength, even if I didn't understand it, even if I didn't always think about it, even if I didn't pray or meditate as much as I need to, I know it is always there. The freedom of knowing that relieved so much stress and energy that I was putting into things I didn't need to, and allowed me to put them into other areas. First of all, my recovery. Second of all, being a father, or helping other addicts, being able to start a podcast. I can tell you for a fact, without any shadow of a doubt, if I did not have a loving and high, and caring higher power, and I did not believe that I was living in my higher power's will, I would not be sitting here doing this podcast right now. Because the amount of fear, the amount of worry, the amount of control I would have tried to exert on every single element of this process, there's no way I would be live right now. I'd still be trying to figure out how to make a damn website. Because by asking for help, I'm opening myself up for help, which allows me to open myself up for a loving and caring higher power. That's what we do. We ask for help. And again, the only way that we can do that is by being honest, open-minded, and willing. So I personally love the third step. Wow, sorry, there's an Amazon truck going by right now. But I personally just love the third step. It was the one of the most influential parts in my recovery, continues to be, even though sometimes I have tried to impose my self-will and then get mad when I'm able to. It talks about that in the literature. Like, how funny is it that we might even be able to take our self-will back and then get angry when, you know, that we were able to? But again, my higher power's will is not a set out plan of this is what you're going to do. It is a template for which I try to live my life by. It's a way to feel good about what I'm doing. Because inherently, whatever is in my higher power's will is going to be a positive in the world, in my life, in recovery, in helping others. That's just what I believe. I don't believe that anything that would be in my higher power's will is going to be selfish. It's going to be self-centered. It's going to be self-seeking. It's always going to be to try and make the world a better place. So even when I don't directly ask, like, oh, is this in my higher power's will? Subconsciously, I'm thinking, am I doing something to help the world? Am I doing something to make the world a better place? Am I doing something that I'm passionate about? Am I living with dignity? Am I laughing? I laugh a lot. So if I'm laughing, inherently, I'm living in my higher power's will. Am I finding joy and beauty in my surroundings? Yeah, I am. Every single day, I find beauty in the fact that I'm able to help. And that is such a freeing feeling. So if you haven't worked the third step, if you're struggling with what is your higher power's will, I ask that you just read that again. Again, we began to see that God's will for us is the ability to live with dignity, to love ourselves and others, to laugh, and to find great joy and beauty in our surroundings. There, we find that they are the very essence for God's will for us. And that is an essence I can get behind. That is an essence that works for an addict like me. And if you would have told me that I would find something that would work from a perspective of a higher power's will, you know, 3.5 years ago, that wouldn't be possible. I was so living in self-will that I couldn't comprehend living in something else's will. I just couldn't. So if you're struggling with that concept, if you're struggling with that idea, just stick around. Because by doing it, by being open-minded, we become willing to do it. And as we do it, it becomes easier. Just like for me with prayer. When I started doing it, it became easier to do. When I started actually attempting to turn my will over, I was able to do it. But it's easy. It's very easy to make, or maybe not very easy, but it's a lot easier to make that decision than it is to implement it in life on a day-to-day basis. That's definitely been a struggle at times. But I know that if I make that effort to truly work a third step whenever I can, I know things will get easier. So that's what we got for the third step. Next week, we're going into the fourth step. I know everybody says it's the most terrifying thing, but I'm telling you right now, stick around. Fourth step is a beautiful thing, a beautiful process. And we'll see you on that one next week. So now it's time to get to my favorite moment of the week. And it's funny, I was talking with another addict about this, how some weeks just there aren't a lot of positive things. And we were joking about the fact that, you know, I should change the segment to my least favorite moment of the week. But good God, with how much is already negative in the world, do I really want to be adding to that? You know, that is not the point of this podcast. This podcast is for positivity, for hope, for joy. Again, higher powers will live in joy, not living in negativity. So there were some things that ended up popping up, you know, yesterday that I almost added here. So first off, one of the things we're going to talk about was the fact that J.J. Watt officially signed with the Cardinals. Fire, and I love the way he did it. He posted it on Instagram, and then he just put a source, me, with him wearing a Cardinals shirt. That was fire. Also, really loved the moment where, you know, Tiger Woods is in surgery and a bunch of different golfers. It was a Sunday, and they all wore the same clothes that Tiger always would wear on Sundays, you know, red shirt, black pants. I thought that was a really cool look. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about, but I'm not going to talk about it now because I'm hoping that after the Academy Awards, we'll be able to talk about it. But the fact that Chadwick Boseman won the Golden Globe for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, really good movie if you haven't seen it. Very, like, not normal type of movie. It was from a play, and it is filmed very much as though it's a play. So keep that in mind, but amazing performance. But what we are going to talk about today was a little back and forth between Zlatan Ibrahimovic and LeBron James. And my favorite moment of the week was LeBron James's response to it. I know we got a bunch of stuff from sports today, but I'm trying to tie it in so it's not just sports related, because this goes a lot deeper than just sports. So Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Swedish soccer player, always liked the guy. Only bad thing I had to say about him was he had a horrible man bun. Sorry, hashtag hate man buns. If you got one, no shade on you. I just personally hate him. Great soccer player, whatever, whatever, right? Shout out to him for helping build the MLS up for a couple seasons. Still playing basketball. I'm sorry, still playing soccer at 39 years old and still productively a member, you know, of AC Milan, I believe. Sorry, I've been out of soccer for a while. But he came out and said that LeBron James, or that first off, he prefaced it by saying that, you know, people who aren't politicians shouldn't talk about politics. That he is the best at kicking a ball, so he should focus on kicking a ball. And I would have been okay if he had just said that. But the fact that he then said, LeBron James is great at what he does, but he should stick to what he does. And we're going to get to the different levels of this, because there's a lot of things that I felt and brought up and, you know, within that. But LeBron's response was that, I will never shut up about something I feel is wrong. And that is exactly what I feel we need people to do. You know, it's a weird thing, and I don't really understand why it is that, you know, Zlatan would say, okay, well, hey, you're good at this, so just stay in that. Stay in your lane, bro. But we don't really have lanes anymore. You know, it's not, the world has changed and evolved, and everything has changed so much that it's not like we can just classify somebody as like, oh, hey, you're a this. This is a what you do, nothing else. That's not the world we live in. And I'm so grateful that that's not the world we live in. To simply say, stay in your lane, you're good at basketball, just do that. Anything else doesn't look good on you. I am so vehemently against that. Because LeBron inherently is doing what he believes he can to make the world a better place. And that, I believe, is one of the greatest things we can do as human beings. And I'm not saying I agree with all of you know, LeBron's efforts and everything that he is doing to try and move the needle on you know, social justice issues or anything. I'm not here to argue that element of it. What I'm here to discuss is the fact that being able to use your position to better the world is inherently what I believe is my higher power's will. Being able to help make the world a better place, why would somebody directly tell them to not do that? I don't understand that. And I loved how LeBron simply said, I'm not going to stop that. He understands that he has a platform because he's one of the best basketball players in the history of basketball. But he's more than that. And I believe, you know, as with a lot of major athletes who have been huge driving forces within society, that is one of the greatest things that they could do. You know, Muhammad Ali is quite possibly the best boxer of all time, but he also was a major component of moving humanity. I mean, Jim Brown, Megan Rapinoe. Rapinoe? Sorry. Sorry, Megan. Doubt you'll ever see this, but sorry. These are the type of people that are doing something to change the world. And even if I don't, and I'm not saying I agree or disagree with what any of those people's effort was, inherently, they're using their platform to stand by what they believe. So why would that want to be muted? Why would somebody want to shut that down? That just doesn't make sense to me. You know, we don't live in a world where it's just stay in your lane, bro. Just this is you. We don't live in that world anymore. You know, people's experience is what shapes how we see society. You know, it's not like just, oh, hey, you're in a basketball player lane. So everything that occurs to you in life is just in that lane. Oh, and you're in a dishwasher lane. So everything that occurs to you is just in that lane. That's not how we as human beings work. That's not how society works. We process society. We process life through our different lenses, through our realities. And the beautiful thing within, you know, being on a planet with 8 billion people is there are always going to be other people that have processed through that same lens, regardless of what their profession is, regardless of what their education is, because that's what we do. Sometimes we don't do that very well. Sometimes we don't focus on the similarities and we divide. And, you know, Zlatan tried to say afterwards, oh, well, politics divide, sports unify. Kind of tried to walk back his statement a little bit. But what I would ask him is then at what point does that mean that like all sports, any sports celebrity or any athlete, just focus on that? So any movie star, God forbid that you have any kind of cause or desire to push humanity forward, just read your lines. What about musicians? So you're telling me that the Beatles, you know, just nope, make your music. Go hop on that yellow submarine. That's it. Don't say anything political. Don't make any comments. Just stay in your lane. That doesn't make the world a better place. I genuinely believe that that's not how society works, especially not how government works. You know, he said that politicians should be political. Well, if we're waiting on just politicians to bring up issues, to make changes to better society, we're going to be waiting a very long time. Because anybody who knows the American political system and knows the slow grind of politics knows that that's not logical. One of the best ways that we have as a society to explain to our lawmakers and the people in government what it is that we want is by having a representative or a person that people listen to. Because if I go up to my, you know, senator or governor and say, hey, bro, they ain't gonna listen. But if somebody with a large social platform does, you have a much better likelihood of somebody listening. And inherently, things can change. Now, obviously, that can also be a negative. There are people that could use that platform to push a negative agenda. And I'm not trying to get into the semantics of that. What I'm trying to just discuss is that as a spokesperson for his own reality, that just so happens to be the same story for a lot of other people, I love what LeBron did. And I love that LeBron went right back and said, nah, bro, I'm never going to stop that. Because he's using his platform to make the world a better place, whether it's by opening schools, whether it's by starting dialogue with former presidents, whatever it is, he's helping to continue making the world a better place. And that's what I'm trying to do here. And again, please realize, I'm not trying to say that my podcast with the growing viewer numbers and all of those things is going to change the world in any way just for today in this moment. But I believe that I'm doing something to make the world a better place. Which really I feel is the entire point of being a human being. Sure, it'll be great to one day drive a Lamborghini, but that's not my point on Earth. Sure, it'd be great to have a private island and to fly around in a, you know, on a PJ in my PJs. But that's not my purpose. I believe my purpose is to try and make the world a better place. So for somebody to come through and say not to do that is very curious to me. And then it gets into another element, this element of hypocrisy. Because if you go a little deeper, and LeBron mentioned this, in 2018, Zlatan was being interviewed and said that he believes there's undercover racism because he doesn't have a standard Swedish last name. So he's perfectly fine talking about it when it's something that involves him, but God forbid that somebody else mentions it. I don't understand that. Keep that same energy, bro. To me, that truly feels hypocritical. So why are you out here using your platform to discuss an issue of racism, but now 3 years later are telling somebody else, don't use your platform, stay in your lane, bro. I don't understand that. And I don't understand what the end game of that is. What end? That doesn't make sense to me. Why would you tell somebody, stop making the world a better place, even if you don't agree with what they're doing? Even if you don't agree with all of their points or causes, the fact that they're able to use their platform to make the world a more habitable place for humanity should always be a positive, I think. And then the last issue that I want to talk about with this is the wording of it sounded so racist to me. And maybe this isn't, I doubt this was the point of what he was trying to say, but the fact that a wealthy white dude is telling a black dude to stay in your lane, bro, just stay in your lane, that sounded like such a dog whistle to me. It sounded like a few years ago when a news anchor told LeBron to shut up and dribble. Like, don't you dare have a point. Don't you dare have a thought process. Just go out there and do what we let you. That's how it came across to me. And I'm not saying that's what she said, and I'm not saying that's what he meant. But to me personally, that's what it struck me. It struck me very racist. It struck me very like, ugh. And maybe something was lost in translation or whatever, but inherently it sounded very much like a dog whistle. A very like, oh, well, hey, we're letting you go play basketball. Be happy you can do that. Stick to what you do. Don't you dare try to have a thought. Don't you dare try to do what you believe in. Don't you dare try to drive a cause that you feel passionate about. I don't know. That's just something that really, really struck me in a weird way. So my favorite moment of the week was LeBron standing up and saying, nah, bruh, I'm going to stand for what I believe in, because that is something that I think is inherently, first off, American freedom of speech. That's that, you know, I feel like that's what we do. But also just the fact that trying to do something better based on how you see society through your lens and the lens of, you know, millions of others, that's a beautiful thing for me. So that was my favorite moment of the week. Got a couple things possibly for next week. Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But you know what time it is? Time to go to our next segment.
It's time to Ask an Addict with your host, Matthew M.
All right, we are back answering some questions. This is the part of the show where we answer different questions submitted by listeners and viewers. If you are interested in submitting a question, please go ahead and send it to Matthew@cleanandfilthypodcast.com. We'll try to answer as many questions as we can here on air. They don't have to be all recovery related. Definitely happy if they are. Again, I'm not speaking in any way, shape, or form for any fellowship or as an authority on recovery. This is really a lot of my opinion in here, but also what has worked for me personally. So yeah, if you are interested, or you can always send the questions through social media as well. So for all that information, check out www.cleanandfilthypodcast.com and make sure to like all that and then submit the questions there. So we had some great questions. Had a few from last week that we didn't get a chance to get to. First question submitted was, what do I feel addiction is? And this was an interesting point, thought process for me. And I actually, when this question was asked of me, I sat there for a second trying to kind of formulate what my answer would be. Because, you know, it says in our literature that addiction is you know, obsession, compulsion, and complete self-centeredness. But for me personally, I feel that there's an underlying element to all three of those that really speaks to what addiction is. And that's the element of pain. That pain piece, if you will, is the underlying motivating factor for so many of us to finally want to do something different. And I feel like for me, and I didn't realize how much pain was truly involved. I didn't realize how much of pain was a thing. And I didn't realize how much I liked pain.
Phrasing?
That part. But when looking at it, there was so much pain that I really feel like that is the key point of addiction. For me, I feel addiction is pain. Because once we can work through that pain and enter into recovery, the pain inherently gets lifted and gets pulled back. So there was a very interesting conversation, a very interesting conversation we had about it at that time. And I wanted to go a little bit more into it because for me, I really feel like that pain element is the most driving center element of addiction, period. Whatever that addiction is, because pain is often what leads our life to be unmanageable. Pain is what we feel after we're living in a powerless situation. You know, when I don't want to use, but I do, and then I feel that internal pain that I did it to myself again, that's that driving element, in my opinion. So for me, pain is definitely the central, you know, factor for what I feel addiction really is. Had another great question. It says, how soon should we integrate the 11th step quiet time into our program? Should we wait until we are actually on that step, or should we start letting that step work us ASAP? Now, this is a huge thing for me because this goes back to the level of spirituality. You know, this goes back to developing that constant contact with our higher power. And for me, that quiet time that we're supposed to do within the 11th step, that prayer, that meditation, that improving our conscious contact with our higher power, that is one of the most vital aspects of recovery for me. But I'll say I'm not good at it. I am not good at meditating. I just don't think to do it a lot of times. Like I've shared about it before. I, you know, for praying, I set a reminder on my mirror and I set one on my phone. And I have the same thing for meditating. And guess how often I meditate? Usually once a week when I go to a meditation meeting. And that's not good. That's not good because I know I need to formally get my practice of meditation better because I know it will make my life better. And taking that time is beneficial immediately. You know, we talk about a lot that we don't have to have worked a step to start implementing the spiritual principles within it into our lives. We don't have to have formally worked a second step before we could start believing in a power greater than ourselves. We don't have to have formally worked a sixth step before we can start looking at our character defects. So we don't need to wait until we're on the 11th step to start formally addressing, you know, our conscious contact with our higher power. Because if we can take the time to just sit with our thoughts and ask for guidance, it helps quiet our minds. And if we're quieting our minds, it helps us try to establish something more. And this could be a very difficult thing for a lot of people. It's still a very difficult thing for me. Oh my God, I remember when I was in treatment and we would have a 45-minute meditation check-in, you know, body scan. That was, I will say, I slept almost every single time. Every single time, I could not get into it. So we have to find what works for us. We have to find what types of prayer, what types of meditation, what types of ways we can connect with our higher power. So I immediately would say that no, you do not need to be on the 11th step before you can start implementing elements of the 11th step into our program. But it's going to be more difficult for some people than for others. Some people are great at meditating. They're great at prayer. They're incredibly spiritual, you know, walking around like with some amazing auras. And some of us, it takes a lot more work. And that's okay. That's okay, because in this program and in this process, we can find other people that it's difficult for. We can ask for help. Some of the greatest help I've gotten spiritually was simply following what somebody else did and asking them about it and asking them to help me. Say, hey, you're spiritual AF. Help me, to quote Kevin Hart. Help me. And that's what we do. So, you know, I think that implementing some type of conscious contact, some type of daily dialogue is vital within our program. So please do it, especially the person who asked this question. He's one of my sponsees. So please do it. And I know you already do. You're probably more spiritual than me, honestly, bro. You got that spirituality. All right, next question. It says, can you give an example of when you turned over your will today and how did you do it? So this, you know, perfectly lines up with you know, third step stuff. And this is a very difficult element for me in a lot of ways, because there are always times with certain people and certain situations that I want to impose my will. I want to tell you why you're wrong, especially when you actually are. But I have to remember that I am powerless over people, places, and things. I'm powerless over people's thoughts. I'm powerless over people's actions. I'm powerless over my thoughts. The only thing that I have any kind of power over is how I respond to things. And this is something, especially in a situation with one specific person who I have contact with every other weekend when I see my son. This is an instance that I constantly have to turn my will over, because my will is I want to type out that message explaining all of the reasons why this person is wrong, all the reasons why they're incorrect. And most of the time, I will type out the message. Most of the time. But I won't send it. I will admit, sometimes self-will takes over and I send it. Ah, I'm sorry. But I'll type it out and then I'll think about it. And then if I'm really struggling, I'll ask another person. And I'll say, hey, Does this sound spiritual? Because for me personally, a lot of times I can manipulate myself into thinking something sounds spiritual, or that I'm living in my higher power's will, as I discussed earlier, and I'll get somebody else's opinion on it. And then sometimes I'll just delete it anyway, because it's not necessary. I don't need to be right. One of the most beautiful things that I've heard in recovery is that sometimes we're right and sometimes we grow. Because when I'm right, that feels great. But I don't need to feel right. Because if I'm not right, that gives me an opportunity to grow. And how I can grow is by turning my will over on conversations with certain people at certain times, but knowing that I don't need to impose my will or need to tell somebody why they're wrong. And that's difficult for me. That's so difficult for me at times, because I'm a very scientific person. I'm a very, you know, this is the answer. You can't tell me 2 + 2 = 5. 2 + 2 = 4. But that's when it comes to something that isn't a factual type of thing like that, how somebody perceives something might be different. And by turning my will over and saying, okay, that is your reality. That's your experience. That isn't mine. And that's okay. It sucks at times. But again, it's also so freeing, because I don't have to try and control or push or force. I'm able to just take a step back and just say, okay, Okay is a full sentence. No is a full sentence. I don't have to say okay, but, or no, because. I can just say okay. I'm able to live with dignity then. I'm able to respond to something without lowering my sense of self. And that's simply because I'm turning it over to my higher power's will. So that's something that again, I do a lot of times almost subconsciously. It's much more conscious when it comes to certain people and situations. And that's where relying on other people to get their experiences or their opinions is so vital for me and my recovery. And it's 6:05, so I'm going to save these other two questions for next week because I want to try to keep this around the hour and 10-minute mark. So thank you guys for your questions. Again, if you want to submit more questions, they don't have to be recovery-based. They can be on anything. Again, I like answering questions. I don't know why. I just do. It's fun. So ask me questions, and I'll answer them. And if it helps somebody else out there, cool. If it doesn't, I still like answering them. So before we close up for the day, we got one more segment. It's time for some clean time shout-outs. Now, this is the segment of the show where we give shout-outs to people who are celebrating universally recognized milestones within the programs. So that's newcomers, which is 0 to 29 days. That's for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 6 months, 9 months, 1 year, 18 months, and multiples of years. Plus, because, you know, once you get up to those higher numbers, you don't get to celebrate as much. We also recognize when you hit big numbers. So if you hit, 100 days, 500 days, 1,000 days, 10,000 days, let me know and we will give you a shout out on air. Again, to submit your clean time, please just send your first name, where you're from, and how many days you're celebrating over this last week. And we will go ahead and get you a shout out on air. And of course, send that to Matthew@cleanandfilthypodcast.com or on any social media. I check them all. So first up, we've got my boy Brad celebrating 30 days. Well done. Next up, we got my grand sponsee, Baltimore, with 6 months clean. Half a book. And then we got my homegirl, Kate, with 9 months clean. Shout out, Kate. Well done. Another person that I've watched the entire time through this pandemic. Absolutely love that. Then we're going out to Vegas. We've got Pam with 1 year clean. Boom. Well done, Pam. And my boy Trevor with 1 year clean. Boom. Well done. Now we're going back to Vegas for Dusty with 11 years clean. Boom, 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 boom. Wow. And then finally, we've got Dan with 13 years clean. But, nah, I can't. It's just... There we go. We get up to that high. We're just doing sound effects for that. I don't have enough bups in the chamber. We're going to have to reload after that. So, well done, everybody. Congratulations. If you didn't pick up any time today, don't use. Keep coming back. And you will. And make sure you send it over here so we can give you a shout out. Well, guys, it is officially that time. Thank you for another amazing episode. I love each and every one of you. If nobody's told you that today, I love you. Big shout out to C4L Designs for this amazing hat. Going to be looking to do some partnerships here with some merch, so we'll be getting more information about that. And remember, what I cannot do alone, we can do together. Hope to see everybody here next week, 5 p.m., right here on YouTube. And of course, please, please, please go wherever you consume podcasts. Download us, like us, search for Clean and Filthy Podcast. Clean and Filthy, one word. See you next week. Love you all. I just wanna feel